Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Yeah, okay. It's crazy time. It's madness is happening. It's weird. It's wild. It's wacky. I was taking pictures earlier of writing many things. I was just taking a bunch of screenshots. I saw a tweet from Federico Vittici yesterday about how he spent the day taking screenshots. It's like, yep, because for those not in the know, you can write a whole article about iOS 11 or a book, basically, as Federico does every year about iOS. But they change things in the beta, so you can't really take the screenshots or movies or anything until it's final. And it's now. So I was taking screenshots this morning and yesterday and putting those in the story that I'm writing for Macworld about it. I handed that off actually a minute before I called you. I handed that off to Roman at Macworld, and I said, okay, here it is. I posed my iPad and an iPhone with like features of iOS 11 on my coffee table and took some pictures and because they're like for the lead picture is a screenshot's really dumb. So instead it's a screen on a computer on a table, which is not, and it's not much less dumb than that, but there it is. So I did all of that and sent that off, and it's like, okay, now on to the next thing, which is like eight other articles about iOS 11 plus a couple of things about like reacting to the other announcements this week. It's so the busy season totally in swing, and there's been a load of stuff on Six Colors this week, so you know you've been at it too. It's
yeah, it's one of those. I remember from many of the days when I used to write iOS reviews to Macworld, I would be up late finishing all the screenshots right before the embargo was supposed to drop or whatever. Oftentimes, because we had less lag time, I feel like, than we have. I mean, a week is not a lot, but like, I feel like in the past, we didn't always know how soon it was going to arrive.
Yeah.
And we didn't always have access to all the betas either at various times.
Right.
So I remember
the luxury of knowing that it's coming out, Tuesday?
Yeah. That's light years of time. I mean, I do remember going to play a Frisbee game at night because they were often at night, and having to like turn around and leave immediately afterwards because I was still technically on deadline.
You're fired.
We had a good run.
Yep.
I don't miss it.
It's that time.
It's that time of year.
There's a lot going on. Although, and I think we might have talked about this in a previous Six Colors podcast, but it's and I know I have on other podcasts. I love this. I realize that this is probably not strategy, although maybe some of it is strategy. I think a lot of it is circumstance. But like, the Apple event happens on the 12th, right? And pre-orders happen on the 15th. Then the iOS 11 ships on the 19th. Then the new new iPhone 8 arrives along with the Apple TV and the watch. Is that the 22nd?
Yeah. So a week after the pre-orders.
Right. And then macOS is going to drop on the 26th, I think.
I think this is 25th, actually.
25th, a Monday. Yeah. Why not a Monday for Mac Monday, sure. iOS Tuesday, whatever. And then you get the iPhone 10, which is not going to drop until November. So they pulled it out a little bit. Like, as somebody who's written about macOS and iOS a lot, I don't need those released the same day. Thanks. No need. So,
I had been sitting around wondering, because obviously High Sierra didn't get any time on stage this week. They did put it up on the website that it would arrive on the 25th. And I believe there is a GM candidate for it right now. And I think we possibly discussed at some point that it sounded like the High Sierra betas might be a little rockier than the iOS stuff. And this gives them a little more time to finish polishing it up. But, I have not, this is the first time in a long time I haven't installed a Mac OS beta on at least one of my computers by this point. So I had been sort of thinking, casting around, being like, maybe I should install the GM candidate. And then part of me is like, new file system, maybe I should wait for the GM.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I'm going to do. But it's a weird situation to be in because I have not touched High Sierra at all. I don't even have it on a partition or a separate drive. But then again, it's not the biggest release that we've had. You know, I'm looking forward to some of the features that they're rolling out for Safari, but other than that, a lot of the stuff is, you know, very under the hood, so your chances of noticing it are, you know, fairly negligible for a lot of people. But there are some interconnectivity stuff with iOS, although a lot of that seems to have been pushed back because we're not getting the cloud-based iMessages. They pushed back Apple Pay, person-to-person Apple Pay on iOS. There are one or two other things, too, that seem like they just didn't make the cut for the 0.0 release.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I guess that's something to look forward to at some point down the road. There's still stuff to come from Apple this year, which is kind of a weird position to be in, because like you said, it seems like oftentimes there's that event in September and then there's a flurry of activity for the next week and a half, and then it's just like, all right, run up to the holiday season, all our product line is out and done. And
I didn't even mention HomePod, and
HomePod didn't come up at all.
Mac Pro is supposedly this year too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff still on the release calendar, but it's not all dropping at once, and that's just fine with me. It's just fine.
We could use the stagger. We don't have a giant staff at our disposal anymore, so.
No, we don't. We disposed of them, or they disposed of us, or both.
A mutual disposal.
Yeah, that's right. Mutually assured disposal. We're all down in the garbage disposal now, I guess.
Well, all right. So as you were at the event.
I was.
Were there, for our subscribers, were there any things that you noticed being at the... I mean, obviously, I watched the stream. I saw pretty much the same thing you did, but obviously, then you got some hands-on time, and always being in the room is a little different. Were there any specific things you noticed, you know, actually being there that you took note of?
Well, I wrote some of it up, like the Apple Park on the site. It was, you know, it's a different way to get there, a different exit on the freeway, a different place to park. It's down in this... you know, current Apple, modern day, like infinite loop Apple, and most of the places that they hold events too, like there's surface parking and all that. But Apple Park is all about the underground parking. They do have two huge overground parking lots, but they also have, my impression is, a lot of underground parking. And so I parked deep underground with the Lapa men.
Deep underground.
And then emerged into that visitor center area, which I came back to at the end. I didn't go in. I don't think it was open at the beginning. I certainly didn't go in because I was running a little late. I was plenty on time for the event, but I like got there about 10 minutes before they let people into the theater. So I was, which was half an hour before the event. I mean, that ring is enormous. Like, I was going on around it on the surface streets to get to it, because you kind of exit at one side on the west side of the park, and then you move all the way past it and then make a right turn and go along the north side and then make another right turn and go along the east side, and then that's where the visitor center is. It's across the street. So, you know, I'm kind of circling this giant hulking spaceship thing. So that was quite a thing. And then and then you cross the street from the visitor center, and there's like what looks like it's basically a security kiosk. It's bigger than that, but I don't think it's like an office building. I mean, it's a glass box. It looks like every Apple store or anything else that Apple does, right? And but I think that's what it's going to be for, is like it's the interface to that part of the campus to only let in the people who are allowed in and not anybody else. But anyway, we went through there. That was the check-in area. Got our little badges, little event badges. And then it's like a winding path uphill. They actually had to provide a golf cart for people who are not have mobility limitations or other health issues that prevent them from being able to walk a quarter of a mile up a hill, because it's not right across the street or anything. It's up on top of this hill that is artificial hill, by the way. It's all artificial there. It was a flat landscape before, but they've trucked in who knows how much dirt. That hill overlooks the big ring. You get a better view of it. I posted a picture of it. It will be lovely when all the sort of grass has grown in on the rolling fields. But
the greenlands, yeah.
Yeah, but now it's just kind of dirt and everything smells like fertilizer, which several people noted. It is in delicate or indelicate terms, I'll say, to me, that, you know, they noticed it, I noticed it. I mean, yeah, it smells like fertilizer. They literally have planted like 150 acres with all of these plants freshly planted, and so they are all it's pretty powerful fertilizer kind of thing. It's going to be amazing. I pity the, especially since the building breathes, you know, it uses air from the outside as part of its structure. I pity the severe allergy people at Apple, because they're going to need to take some serious Allegra. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have the cooling system is all like ambient based,
yeah,
well that, right?
Yeah, that's the building breathes in it, and it brings in air from outside and all
that.
Yeah. And
that's going to be pretty funny in hay fever season.
Surrounded by these plants. So good luck to them. They just take your pills. Take your nasal spray, whatever you need to do to not have just terrible allergies. But beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. And my real question is like, not to get off track, but momentarily I will get off track and say my real question is going to be, I wonder how this is all going to play out when it's all said and done and everybody's moved in, because the grounds are enormous. They are enormous, and there are walking paths, and there's going to be like fields and stuff. I'm unclear whether the fields are all going to be keep off or whether they're going to be kind of like some of them are going to be grassy, more grassy. You would think that if there were grassy fields, they would, the grassy fields are probably like sodded rather than this rolling hills kind of stuff between the theater and the circle appears to be more not meant to be walked on, just like wild natural, to give a wild natural look for the people looking out from either side. But I just wonder how it's going to work and how people are going to use it. And if it's entirely possible that the visible area over by the Steve Jobs Theater is basically not going to be used except during events. Like maybe people will take long walks from Apple Park and will go over there, you know, employees, because it's all within, I imagine it's all going to be within a security cordon. I'm unclear whether they would even, from that visitor center, if they even would do a tour because of all the security issues, although maybe they actually structured so they could. I don't know. But the Steve Jobs Theater is way away from the main part of the campus. And I wonder, like, is that part of the campus really just there to be looked at from the other part, just to be pretty and natural, because the goal of the whole park design is to replicate Silicon Valley when it was, you know, the Santa Clara Valley when it was just fields and stuff instead right. of totally built up. And so I wonder if that's really how most of that outside part is going to be used, is just as protection from the outside world, so you don't see the outside world and they don't see in, and so that it looks nice and pretty and soothing for the people who work at Apple, or whether it will actually get used. And you know, I'm sure the architects have ideas, but we'll find out, right? Because we know about desire paths, we know about how people will walk where they want to walk. And
sure.
And, you know, I guess they'll find, I think it's fun to think about that. And then there's the inside, which is how, you know, maybe the intent is really to have the inside of the ring be the place where everybody goes, and that the outside of the ring is, you know, more buffer and pretty to look at. And I don't know their intent, and I don't know how it'll work out in the end, but it was beautiful. And the theater is amazing. So the theater, like, it's got a little roof and it's just glass all the way around, and there are no visible supports. And I think they were worried because of the crowds. They didn't have any, you know, any furniture in there to speak of. And I think it would be a nicer experience with, you know, if there was furniture in there instead of just literally it being an empty floor surrounded by glass, because it was just like an empty pod. But
it's going to get beamed up.
Yeah, but it's beautiful. And then they've got the, you know, those stone curving steps down on both sides, and the hands-on area, which is hidden on the way in and then is revealed on the way out. And then the theater itself is, you know, it's beautiful. It's exactly what you'd expect. It's kind of like Town Hall, except way bigger. It's got the same kind of aesthetic as the redesign that they did at Town Hall. There's better leg room by far, but it's, you know, leather seats, power outlets in the feet. heat. They were hard to find. I actually tweeted, someone was like, there's supposed to be power outlets. And I was like, I don't see them. And somebody took a picture that they're like all the way down in the feet of the seats. But they are there. There is one. And that's good because everybody wants to plug something in. And yeah, I wonder what they're going to do with that theater. That's one of my other curiosity things about just how this campus will wear. Because presumably they will do campus events there too for at least the employees.
Well, and I saw and somebody note that like some of the in the front sections the armrests like fold up, which makes me wonder if like if you fold those up, there's just like way more. It's like bench seating, right?
Yes.
So you can fit maybe more people in parts of it.
Maybe, maybe not. No, I think not a lot more because it's only down on the floor seating that, that has the fold up and fold down benches that make it look a little more pew like. I'm told by people who go to church because I do not, but that sounds about right. My memory, if I search my memories. And so, yeah, so I just wonder how they're going to use it. They'll presumably use it for employee stuff, but like, how will that work? And what's the, you know, how do they want to operate it? And will they, again, I have this question. I'm going to go with the default assumption that it's not for the public use at all, but some companies actually do let public events happen on their campuses and they open them up for certain events. And I wonder if Apple might do that. Again, the reflex action is like, no, of course not. Nobody's setting foot on that campus. They'll go to the visitor center and that's all. But I don't know. It is so removed from the main part of campus. And there is that glass kind of entry booth thingy over on that side that I do wonder if maybe the way it's designed is to allow Apple to let people, not all the time, but like in controlled groups at certain times, go on that part of the campus and also still keep them away from the rest of the campus. And if that, that might be something that like, they'll say, yes, of course, we will allow you to, we're going to do a screening of this movie at the Steve Jobs Theater and you can park at the visitor center and go through the entry gate and go up to the theater and watch the movie and then leave. But they will have kept everything else secure. So it may be built that way. I've never read anything about that and I don't know, but I'm kind of curious because they could do it that way. It's not, it's totally isolated from the rest of the campus. So other than blocking off a couple of walking paths with security people, which is what they did for this event, it would be, it seemed, it's a beautiful new theater. It would seem a shame to not use it a lot.
Maybe they'll have a movie night. I hear it's, I hear it's a good place.
I imagine they will have a movie night for employees. That is, that would be that would be pretty nice. It's, I mean, it's state of the art, right? It's Apple. Apple is not gonna gonna skimp on sound and picture and lighting and all of the and all of that. It isn't gonna skimp on it. So it's a beautiful space. It's exactly what you'd expect. Basically, if you can imagine an entire corporate campus that's a, an Apple store writ large, that's what it is. It's the same. It's the glass and the wood and all of those things that you'd expect from an Apple store. And then, of course, the visitor center is literally an Apple store, plus a cafe. If you can imagine a cafe inside an Apple store, well, that's what it is.
Isn't that what they're doing? I mean, they're not stores anymore, Jason. They're town squares.
Well, let's be clear. Are they? I think maybe the town squares are the ones that are the really big ones that have trees and stuff in them. But
they're
yeah,
still stores.
They're still stores. Well, I mean, I don't know. Having been at the Union Square one, I mean, there's a store part of it, and then there's a, I don't know what this is, but it doesn't feel like a store part of it.
But weird grove upstairs.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I don't know what that, and I think that's what when Angela Ahrendts talks about that, I think that's what she means. But
That was an unfortunate line, I feel like, and immediately, you know, became all my entire Twitter feed was people making fun of that line.
I think bottom line is she lives in the world of retail and is speaking in terms of how the retail industry thinks of itself and how the people in the retail world describe this. And, you know, our friend Lisa Schmeiser, who follows this stuff, was like, this is luxury retail. This is how they talk, right? But the problem is nobody listening almost cares about or understands the luxury retail context. And so I think it's an interesting choice because as a content person, right, I look at that and say, I don't think this is your audience. I think you should phrase this differently. I get that that's the way you talk, but you know, but it may be that they're just trying to use that phrasing because that part of the thing is really not for us, right? It is really for I don't know why you use a keynote to talk to people who think about the retail segment, though. I feel like you'd use it to talk to your customers, and I think it was too jargony for that. But anyway, the idea of the cafe, though, just to dwell on this a little bit, I don't know how it'll be when it officially opens, but like there's a bar with all the coffee apparatus behind it, and they had food that they were giving us. Basically, like I ate a roast beef sandwich while I filed my story, which was nice because I was starving. And it's going to be weird to go to the Apple Visitor Center where there's an Apple store and a cafe. Like, are people going to hang out there? Are they going to be like, I'm going to go get a coffee. I'm going to go make a pilgrimage to Apple and get a coffee at the Visitor Center. I guess they will.
I don't know if you have these in your area, but there is definitely one in downtown Boston. There are banks that have cafes.
I've seen, you know, a lot of grocery stores have cafes now, but an Apple store
makes more sense to me. You've already got food there. There's more food. That's fine.
Well, the public spaces thing. I mean, the thing that struck me about it is that although I don't love Angela Ahrens's word choices, love her outfit, by the way. That was very Burberry. It was, she killed it. That like trench coat she was wearing, it was amazing. That's like playing. It's not untucked. White guy outfits,
shirt.
Right? That was like,
Button-down shirt.
Yeah. The adults are here. I didn't like that about it, but I think she's not wrong about the fact that a lot of commercial retail spaces are becoming public spaces because the public likes them and they benefit the commercial enterprises that operate them. And there's probably a real big, way beyond the scope of anything we do, debate that should be had about why is it that companies are making public spaces to profit on, because it suggests that maybe the public entities have abandoned the people they're supposed to serve and can't, you know, or you know, for whatever reason, can't serve them. And so we go to Starbucks instead. But Starbucks is my example. Like, people go to Starbucks to not just to get a coffee, but to spend time and meet right. friends and work and have conversations. And they might do that in a public place, but instead they do it in this semi, you know, in a commercially controlled space. And Apple, why not Apple?
There's really nothing new about that either, right? You know, coffee shop, cafe society has been around for hundreds of years at this point.
That's true. It's funny with the technology and the Wi-Fi and all of those things that, but you're right. In maybe not in the United States so much, where the idea is that it's a restaurant and then you eat and drink and leave. But right. this is like, no, you just go and you hang out and maybe have a coffee, but you're really just there to be there. And right. why wouldn't Apple? I mean, Apple's already kind of, the people who come to the Apple store, they're already doing that. So Apple's just kind of leaning into it. And that part of it makes sense, jargon aside.
Sure, bookshops too, right? Like, that's another place to be fun. There are a lot of both chains, like Barnes & Noble obviously has a lot of Starbucks in it, but also independent bookstores. I've seen a few that have cafes or little coffee shops in them.
And this will be good. I know you'll like this, and obviously I like this too. You know, the other trend is libraries are doing it. Speaking of public institutions that are public spaces, because one of the things that libraries are and are trying to be even more is public spaces for people. And you know what? People go to the library and hang out and do work and all of that sort of stuff too. And that's a public space for them. And a lot of libraries have really leaned into the cafe thing, right? Where they're like, okay, we're going to be, you don't have to go to Starbucks. And they put in Salt Lake City, at the library in Salt Lake City, they have a little retail strip that's basically in the library.
Wow.
It's on the first floor of the library, and then there's a main entrance, but the library building is literally like all library except the first floor, half of it is inside, is retail. And there are two cafes in there. And I thought, that's really smart. And I was there with Lauren, my wife, who is a librarian, and we go to these places, and it's like, library cafes is, you know, new libraries, they're like, we're going to be a public space like Starbucks. Like, you can see that they're like, we can do that too.
Yeah,
this is part of our mission, and we're not trying to, you know, make a profit off of these people. We just want them to come because that's right. why we exist.
They redid the main branch of the Boston Public Library down here over the last few years, and it opened maybe last year, 2 years ago. And the downstairs has a cafe, but also has a one of the local radio stations, WGBH, has a studio right there.
There's public radio, yeah, the public radio studio in Salt Lake City is in the it's outside, because there's also a strip of retail and stuff outside, but the public radio in Salt Lake City is in the library complex. I thought that was a really cool idea.
Yeah, there has been a cafe in the BPL here for a long time. I always think I have such a hard time reconciling it because, again, as the parent or as the child of two librarian parents, it's so antithetical to me to be like, no, you don't bring food into the library.
I know, right?
I have to like counter that like weird feeling about it.
Well, Lauren's boss definitely has that too. And I think it's a real question for them about like, how do you embrace the new in terms of like keeping libraries relevant and accepting the fact that, yeah, people want to have their coffee and maybe food. And so you need to change your way of looking at your certain areas of your library, that there's going to be food there and you're going to need to clean it up. And that's just part of the game. Especially if you can find a place, especially if it's your food and your drink and you're luring them in, or you've got a partner, or you've got somebody next door or something like that. So the point being, I think that's how I would interpret some of what Angela Arendt said, and seeing a cafe at the Apple Visitor Center, I started to think, I wonder if this is a test. I wonder if this is, why don't we do this and see what happens? Because that's not something Apple is doing in their Apple Store, town squares, whatever, but they totally could.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's an interesting choice.
And you know, in the end, they're not doing it. I mean, they're doing it because they know that holistically they make a lot of money on Apple retail, right? And that's smart. I mean, Starbucks is the same way. You know, you could design your Starbucks that, and there are some Starbucks that are like this, where it's literally you just kind of get in line and move along the line, and you're literally moving through the only space in the store, and then you get your coffee and you leave, and there's no place to go. You're just there for the coffee. But they make pretty expansive stores because they know that people want to come there, and they're paying rent on that, right? But they're getting the money back because they've made it a more pleasant place to be. And Apple is very profitable in retail, and they want people to hang out at the Apple Store. So give them coffee if you must.
If you're just joining us, this is Coffee Shop
Coffee
Cast.
Talk. Coffee talk. Libraries. Coffee. Apple.
Yeah.
No big whoop.
Not much else to talk about this week, so.
No. Well, you know, I think all the, anyway, the Apple Park stuff is where I started with this. And it's like, I said in a piece, like, the most important, impressive thing at this event, product launch at this event, is Apple Park. Like, this is the moment where they dedicate the Steve Jobs Theater, show off Apple Park to the press for the first time. It is they're not even moved into to the Apple Park campus, and yet there they are. There is an Apple Parkway, by the way. There's the entryway on the west side is Apple Parkway, which made me laugh. So there's new iPhones and stuff too. I mean, there's been so much talk about those. I think the iPhone X looks really cool. I got to use it briefly, but it's a controlled environment, and a lot of the questions are like, but what about this thing and what about this thing? It's like, we'll have to see when it ships or when the reviews drop for the people who have them. I don't have any. It's not. I don't need to whisper it. I don't have anything. I hope to get review hardware at some point. I think it's good. I think the iOS, the iPhone 8 looks good too. There is an open question about, is it good enough for people to buy it and be happy, despite the fact that there is this iPhone 10 up there that they could also buy for more money.
It depends on the type of person, I think. I mean, when I weighing options for myself, you know, obviously I don't think you and I are necessarily typical consumers.
No, probably
but
not.
But weighing options for myself, it was hard to feel like the buying an 8 was justified for my purposes rather than just either sticking with a 7 or going up to the 10. And certainly with the existence of the 10, it seemed like, that seems like an opportunity there, right? Like, in order to have something to write about, something to look at, something to play around with that is really pushing the envelope in that way. Whereas the 8, not to say it's not a very impressive phone, but it feels to me, to a large extent, like keeping pace, right? Like, you got to have a new phone every year that advances the state of the art a little bit, because that's what people have come to expect. And you need to have, you can't, that can't be the 10 this year because it's essentially priced out. I mean, there's not a lot that would, they could have called it the 7S, right? There's not enough in there, I feel like, that they really felt like they needed to go to 8. Part of me feels like it's a marketing thing because they want to close the gap between having an 8 and a 10, even though the mysterious iPhone 9 may or may not ever exist. Who knows? But it, to me, it feels more like a TikTok sort of upgrade than a massive new upgrade. And it's not to, that's not an intent to be like demeaning of any of the features in there. It's a really good phone, just as the S series phones are really good phones.
Yeah, but, I mean, you could also argue that this is sort of like TikTok, talk. or talk tick. I don't know how that works, but right, because it's like it's incremental. It is so often, it's rare that it's not incremental with Apple. It's much more commonly incremental, where you go from 6 to 6S to 7 to 8. And despite those names, it really is, you know, a series of incremental improvements. So if you go from the 6 or the 6S to the 8, you're going to be really impressed. And if you go from the 7 to the 8, you're going to be like, oh, it's better, or it's nicer, or it's, I like this about it. But, you know, really where you notice it is you're upgrading after 2 or 3 years. And then you notice it because it's the 6 and the 8 are appreciably different in a lot of ways, even though they look kind of alike. And that's because they keep kind of like pushing it forward. The exterior changes are the biggest changes, though, in this line, you know, because it's been the aluminum clad for the 6, 6S, and the 7. And they've gone back to the glass front and back, even though it looks a lot like the 6, 6S, and 7. It's got, you know, it's taken some design hints from the 4 and 5 line, where mm-hmm. now it's got mm-hmm. the glass front and back. Which enables the wireless or the inductive charging and stuff like that.
Not everybody wants
the most expensive iPhone anyway, right?
And that's fine. That's why I think that is part of why they did this. Again, if, you know, part of me thinks that if they could have manufactured the 10 at the scale of the 8, then maybe there would have just been a 10, the scale and price, I should say, right? Yeah, that might have been the case.
If they could get it down $100 and keep their margins and then just keep the rest of the phones kind of like moving down the price list, I think maybe they would, but clearly they couldn't and they didn't want to. I mean, this is both a test by Apple to see what happens if they do this. And it's also, I think, Apple really wanting to be, I wrote a piece about this when this was first rumored, you know, months ago, like, this is also Apple wanting to be seen as being on the cutting edge and being tired. Like, Apple scale means, and Apple standards mean, that there are features that Apple can't be first to market with. Mm-hmm. And I think it gets frustrating. I think they wanted to release the iPhone X last year and they couldn't do it. Just the tech wasn't there. And so this is them saying, we're going to push on this and we're going to have, it's going to be expensive and we may not be able to make as many of them as we'd like at the start, but we want to do it. And then we'll see. I think Ben Thompson wrote a piece that seems right to me, which is that what drives sales in China is appreciably different looking phones. And the 8 actually looks somewhat different from the 6 and 7. And so that might have some appeal in China.
Probably until you put it into a case anyway.
But the 10 really looks different. And so his feeling was that's what drives sales in China is visibly different physical hardware. And I think that's probably right.
I think that drives sales here too, to a certain extent.
To a certain extent, yeah. But
the huge success of the iPhone 6, not just, I mean, a lot part of that it was obviously was a larger screen,
but a lot of that was in China, and then it dropped off immediately. Whereas in the rest of the world, it's the 6S and the 7 have continued to sell very well. In China, they haven't, which suggests that, you know, the novelty really is the thing that drives the sales there. Is they want something that really feels like a brand new phone instead of this iterative stuff. And so that's for the 10. Yeah, the 10, you know, it's the phone to get if you if you want to wait and spend that money. But there's also going to be lots of, with a notch in the screen, they're like, there's going to be a lot of shakeout and shakeout on like apps and stuff where people are going to be figuring it out.
It must have been Gruber talking about the notch and saying that he wishes they would just essentially black bar it on non-home screen and lock screen. And I kind of agree with that sentiment.
I agree. I think I always thought that that's what they would do, is that they would have status to the left and right of the notch with a black background.
Yeah.
At which on that OLED screen, like, it just is all going to look like the whole thing is a black background up there. And somebody decided to just lean into the notch and have it there. And, you know, I think that's a mistake. I think that having it be like apps by default don't go into the notch area, but you can override it would be a better way to do it. Video does it right. Video actually plays with the edge notch so that you don't have a notch cut out of your movie unless you double tap.
The landscape web browser with the white bars on the side just seems especially egregious.
That is a disaster, yeah.
I don't know. It's so perplexing.
Why not have that be with that black bar? Just for that instance, sure. Like put the black bar on the left.
Yeah, my biggest concern over it is that Apple is a company that is less so now than it used to be, but still fairly recalcitrant when it comes to sort of admitting they made a bad choice.
Mm.
And so I kind of worry that because they've doubled down so hard on this, that backpedaling off of that is going to be tricky. My big question is whether a lot of app developers will essentially end run
box it off. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like just be like, you know what? We're just treating that like it's all a status bar. You know, they're told not to, right? Like, I think the stuff, the design docs have been going around are like, you know, you should embrace it and do it. But I just have I know so many app developers who I think are just going to be like, that's just going to look so bad.
Yeah.
So it is perplexing. And obviously, we all know that if they could get away without having it, they would.
Sure. But you got to put the sensors on the front of the phone somewhere, and they have not yet figured out how to
embed it under the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm sure they are working very hard on figuring out that's possible.
I'm sure everybody is trying to. I mean, we've seen patents for like 10 years now about Apple trying to get
cameras and screens,
stuff embedded in the screens. Can you shoot from underneath? Can you, in the blank interval, like, can you flicker the screen and in the moment that it's flickered off, take the picture and then flick it back? I mean, you know, it seems impossible, and yet it seems also inevitable that they will figure out how to do it eventually. But it is weird, because with OLED especially, like, it seemed like that was where they were going, and I'm sure they mocked it up. And for some reason, they decided they weren't going to do that. And yeah, I think having it be the default is just like, yep, deal with it, is weird, and that it might have been better off to just sort of only show it when it's
OS level stuff, sort of.
Or when, you know, you say as a developer, I want to use that space now. Because, I mean, the purpose of having that screen around the notch is to have the screen go all the way to the edge, right? So to have it be unusable screen would be kind of dumb. And on your run-of-the-mill app that's being held in portrait mode on a phone, you know, on the iPhone X, in your hand, I don't think that's going to be a big deal. It's just all of the weird edge cases that are going to be a big deal. So I don't know. It's weird.
It is.
We'll see. I think that it's entirely possible that this will get out in the world and people will be writing about it, and that somebody at Apple will get the upper hand and say, maybe we should change our approach here a little bit. It's not beyond the possibility. They're trying stuff out too. They may figure it out.
I agree. I don't think it's necessarily that they would not walk it back, but it strikes me, there are so many things where you're always like, oh, this thing that they haven't done, or this thing that they've done weird, you know, maybe they'll just walk that back in a point release. And then, like, usually it's like 2 years later, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like iOS, the iPad multitasking stuff. Like,
especially if it affects app developers, which this would. So it's probably not a decision that can be undone for a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the big question will be how app developers do end up treating this, and whether they find a way to do things that are, you know, less disruptive looking, or just they embrace it wholeheartedly and maybe we all get over it. I don't know. But
I don't know.
There are definitely some weird things. The other weird one that somebody pointed out was the scrolling, when the scroll bar on like Safari, if it goes behind the notch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, What?
Yeah. Now, keeping in mind that this is in you're holding the iPhone 10 in landscape, which is a weird orientation, and you know, but that particular direction. But yeah,
I do it. I mean, it's just it's odd to treat it like it's just a thing that's on top of the screen. Like the idea is like, oh, there's just more screen there. You just can't see it. Like with
thinking,
the videos.
I was thinking like refraction. Like they should have it like the scroll bar kind of like glints around the edge, like, oh, it's back there. I can see that it's, you know, you can sort of see that it's back there, something like that, some sort of refraction effect. I don't know. It's weird. The video, I was relieved that the video plays seemingly by default without having the notch in the way, because I knew, I know people would scream about that. Like, you're cutting part of my movie off. You can double tap and then it will do that, but like, that's good. Like, that's good. The phone should know this is important content. I'm going to display it, which I think is what the bars on the side of Safari are trying to do. There's also a safe area. That's the other thing about this phone, is that the screen, because it's that kind of like bent screen, my understanding is that there's screen that you can't count on. So it's like old TVs where you have to make sure everything's kind of in a little bit, because you've got like bleed area that is not meant to be usable, but may be visible. Which is also weird. So I don't know. It's weird. We'll get used to it.
I guess we probably will.
We'll get used to it. All right. Well, we go onward to the next.
Many more things.
So many things. All the things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just beginning right now. Yeah. So
I'm gonna crank
lots
up.
To look forward to.
Crank up the Six Colors magazine machine as well to get some stuff out this month for everybody out there. And thanks again for being subscribers. We appreciate all of you, even you. Yes, even you. That one. You know who I'm talking to.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, we can't hear you. Don't talk back. We can't. We don't have that technology yet. Although we hear you in the incomparable member, or it's the incomparable. Yeah. We hear you in the incomparable member Slack if you're an incomparable member. We hear you in the Six Colors member Slack if you're a Six Colors member. So,
which you probably are because you're listening to this show.
And if you're not, hey, become a member if you like this podcast. Thanks for supporting us. And you get to go into Slack and stuff too. So you can talk to people and we hear you there. We just don't hear you on the podcast. All right. That's enough of that. Dan. It's been a pleasure as always.
Bye. Indeed. Bye.